Hey everybody, thanks for joining us on Dev Radio. I'm Code Foster and I'm joined by a panel of my colleagues, all with one objective. We're going to take some of the information that came out last week at Microsoft's Build 2016 conference and we're going to distill it for you in a relatively fun manner. We're going to have a good time with this. Basically, we're going to take all these announcements, not all of them, but we're going to take a few of these announcements that really get us going, like that really make us excited, and we're going to talk about what those mean for you in your everyday life as a developer. So we're going to skip introductions. You'll meet each of these fine characters as they talk about their topics, and I'm going to start with Jerry Nixon. Jerry's in Colorado, and he's going to tell us what stood out to him at Build.
Well, thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate that. So when I'm watching Build, I'm thinking about Windows. I'm thinking about UWP and all the native stuff that's going on. And a handful of things really hit me. So the first one that was really significant to me was the Action Center changes. Did you see that where I can get notifications now on all my devices? They are all synced up. I can dismiss it on one all the way across. They get dismissed as well. And then developers can control that depending on the type of push notification they send out. So it goes to all or maybe just one if your app, you know, really depends on it. So I thought that was a pretty sweet add-on. And honestly, that was a big request from developers. So that was a huge delivery as far as just like developer pleasure. You know what I mean? And it's same kind of concept is around tiles. This thing where it cycles through the tiles, but you can't, you know, it's like it's showing your photo tile and it shows a picture of your kid or something and you tap on it, but then it takes you to the Photos app and doesn't take you to that photo.
That always bugged me.
Yeah, it bugs all of us. And, well, anyway, so they fixed that too. They call it chaseable tiles. Got kind of a cutesy little name.
But then what I want to see is when you see, like, your contacts and you see someone in your rolling contacts on Windows Phone and you're like, who is that again?
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Want to tap on them.
You took a new picture.
You got to find them,
know who
you know?
It is.
Or they're using some sort of profile picture that doesn't even make sense, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's their dog. So, have you ever scrolled all the way through your contacts in order to find that person?
I've done it. They should have somebody should write an app to search. That'd be incredible. Search by picture.
Yeah.
Object recognition.
Jerry,
we can do that.
Quick question for you.
Nick, go ahead.
Yeah, I've got a quick question for Jerry. So the Action Center integration, the fact you'll be able to dismiss like notifications across the board, do developers have to do something about it, or is that a feature that just comes for free in Windows?
Yeah, it just comes for free, and not just in Windows, across all the devices. And so
nice.
If you have an Android, the same sort of deal with that as well. So it's pretty sweet.
Cool.
That's great. And so what platform specifically? We've got Windows, of course, that's the Windows and Windows Mobile. Android, does it include web? Is there any sort of notifications on web, and is there any sort of notifications on iOS?
There are notifications on the web now. So inside, Edge will be the first to deliver native notifications through the web. And so you'll be able to do that through some, it's a standard, but only Edge is doing it right now. And so eventually anybody should be able to do it on any platform because it's a standard that's not a Microsoft standard. So that part's pretty cool too. The an advanced thing was the app extensions where two apps in the store can load inside each other. So you could have an app and then you wanted it to do something else. Somebody else wrote an app that does what you want it to do and it rolls up inside your application.
Is that the same as app services? Or
No. It's like it's app different. Extensions is what they call it. And it's crazy. It's basically here's what it really is. It's Edge, and you write an extension for it, and they took that exact same technology and just applied it in general to every UWP application, so you could extend them. That was pretty cool. Not as cool though as Project Roam. Did you see Project Roam? I think it's a play on words with ROAM and ROME, but where it's you were talking about app services, so I could call an app service on my phone from my desktop. Like you know what I mean?
Oh wow, yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to
be through
the cloud.
It might be in your pocket, and you don't need to use your internet connection on your desktop.
Or it is through the cloud, and I'm running it on my desktop at home through the cloud. I mean, insane. Yeah, it's really, really cool. Anyway, so those are pretty stunning things. I mean, there are upgrades to the store and stuff that were cool, and tons of things around XAML, but those are the big ones that kind of dropped my jaw.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks for filling us in. Nick, what did you find?
Well, so I was going in basically expecting new features in Cortana, which we did get. For example, the ability to have your own apps now kind of give you like prompts. You know, like for example, Cortana today can tell you if you're late for a meeting or basically before you're going to be late for a meeting, it can tell you, hey, I know where you're going. I know where you are. So based on traffic, you should kind of leave now. So up until now, that was a feature that was reserved for like built-in Microsoft apps. Now you will have the ability to integrate this into your own apps. So you'll be able to get a whole bunch of triggers. Like, for example, if you have a trigger from your app, like before you leave home or when you leave home, and you'll get all these triggers sent to your app. And then you will be able from the background to say to Cortana, hey, by the way, remind them of this or go say that. And it's all going to show up in the Cortana canvas. So and of course, once the Cortana canvas shows up, then they can click and launch your app.
Does it have to show up in the Cortana canvas, or is this something where it can be like Cortana talking to your app and your app can be the thing that responds in a UI manner to the user?
Well, that's basically how all background commands for Cortana work today. Like the fact, for example, that you can integrate background voice commands where you can ask something, your app is launched in the background, and then the results are sent back to the canvas. That's a feature that's already in Windows 10. Now, with the new features with the triggers are basically going to show up directly in the Cortana canvas. I have not really seen if you can actually pop your app open. I don't think so, because that would kind of be annoying if you're like doing something and then suddenly this app just jumps out at you.
Yeah.
It's good if it's good done through Cortana, especially since you can sometimes say like, do not disturb and stuff like that. So that was one of the big things that I wanted to see, but I was completely floored by the bot framework.
When I saw this whole new concept
of bot framework, I was all over that one, because I'm a huge fan of computer speech and natural language processing. And as we've been trying to understand exactly where can we integrate these technologies in our apps, it's become apparent now that breaking down the commands that we can say to a computer kind of like at an app level doesn't really make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. It's more like I want to be able to engage with my computer no matter what. Like I want to be able to do it from text messaging, from email, and from Slack, and from Twitter. So this way I can start just talking to the right user, and that user is a bot that I'm creating. And we've seen that already. Skype already has support for some bots. Slack already comes with a bunch of bots. But now if you want to do this yourself, it's easier said than done, because you have to work with natural language processing, because people can say words in a whole bunch of different ways, and you don't want to have to create like giant switches of all the different possibilities. That's just too much. So the bot framework will basically, it combines also with Lewis from Cognitive Services, formerly known as Project Oxford, and Language Understanding Intelligence Service, or Lewis, connects with all of this so that you can put in kind of like the common sentences that people might say, the way they might ask for something to your bot or your app, and then it will return probabilities of it's probably this command, it's probably this command. So even if there's slight permutations on how they said the command, then even if you didn't exactly specify that one version, your app can still recognize it. And then,
It seemed to me, Nick, like there was kind of a lot of higher level, you know, like polished UIs that were ready for implementing and extending and maintaining all of these different bots as well. Like it's not necessarily that I have to go write something in low level code, publish it somewhere, and now it works as a bot. I get some UI for this, right?
Yeah, so there's a lot of these things that are still in preview. I mean, first of all, the whole bot framework is in preview. The bot framework itself is a combination of different things. There's the bot connector. That's a service that's running on our backend at Microsoft. And that basically will like send messages, receive the messages to you from you. And then it will store, for example, context. You can have a notion of a dialogue as well. So that if there's a certain command that would normally require like four parameters, like they were showing the pizza example, where there's the size of the pizza, the toppings you want to have on it, the address where it's going to have to be delivered. If you ask a command that's kind of incomplete, then the bot framework can engage in a dialogue with you to say, hey, I'm missing this. Where did you want to deliver it again? Or I know the toppings, but I didn't get the size. What kind of pizza do you want? What size? And then at the end, they can provide confirmations, especially when you order something, send money over to someone. You want to make sure that you send this to the right person.
Yeah, you did it right. Yeah.
Nick, am I the only one that feels like we're going back in time here with bots? Doesn't it feel like we used to call these wizards, and now it's all in DOS? Isn't that strange?
Maybe. Yeah, well, it's a very different world. I mean, back in the day, we had these wizards, like little Merlin or Clippy or these things, you know, that were kind of helping us. Mm. But it was very different. They were kind of more like, it was more just of an interactive help system, if you think of it this way. Now, the idea is that how do you truly make something scale? Well, you involve developers in it. Microsoft cannot code every single scenario out there. Just like Cortana, for example, Cortana already has 1,000 apps in the store that extend the vocabulary of what you could ask Cortana. So if I'm into curling, well, you know what? Curling is probably pretty low into the priority list at Microsoft in terms of giving curling scores.
So is that curling? So,
yeah, you curling?
I know. Well, I am Canadian.
Hey,
you know, so
Nick, so by the way, there's May is going to be Bot Hackathon Month. I don't know if you guys saw that, but there's
that is pretty cool.
It's on, at least for Skype bots, there's going to, I'll talk about it later, but yeah, there's supposed to be a series of bot hackathons to help people get better up
well,
on the bots.
That sucks because that's totally going to trump my birthday in May.
Oh, that yeah.
So maybe
good
we'll
to
do
know,
a
Sam,
bot for your birthday.
Okay.
Maybe we'll build a Jeremy bot for you.
Birthday bot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make sure there's a bot to wish you happy
birthday.
Oh, it's
a birthday bot. That's adorable.
We'll have to call it CodeBot.
So
Jeremy
in a nutshell, it's
Bot Foster.
Yeah, in a nutshell, it's a pretty cool service because you've got the bot connector, you've got different channels. So that means once you've built your bot, you can very easily integrate it with Slack, with Skype, with SMS, Telegram, email, and there's going to be more. You can also create your own custom channels. And then there's the SDK itself. Today, the SDK already supports Node.js and C#. But the SDK is open source. It's already in GitHub. So people can actually like extend the SDK, integrate it with other languages. So yeah, I can't wait to play with this. I got a bunch of ideas spinning in my head, you know, in terms of bots I want to build. And yeah, it'll be cool.
I think it's incredible. One other thing I would add on that is I love how integrated in with the bot framework and Lewis, the language understanding intelligence service, if there are questions that users ask your bot that they don't understand, it stores those off. And then in case someone says, you know, I want to buy a pizza and you had just only mapped, I want to order a pizza, mm-hmm. You could essentially then tell it, oh, I can see what people are asking, and then map those to existing commands where you can say, this essentially means the same thing as that. So it makes it very, very easy to develop that and to actually see the real queries that your users are asking.
So that's the UI that Jeremy was talking about there in terms of making sure that the system can learn over time. And even if you have humans
that's
that are involved,
part of Lewis, yeah.
Make it easy to actually make the service grow, because there's always going to be something that people ask, and it's a legitimate request, but you just didn't think of it this way. And
absolutely.
So Lewis, the integration with Lewis is great.
Mm-hmm.
Brian,
you
great
talked
stuff,
about
Nick.
That being kind of a blast to the past, but I look at it as, you know, we're moving toward the future. I mean, the way that we're interacting, the way we interact with computers now, or the way that we're developing to do things now, are just so different. I mean, we had the guy on stage with the blind guy who had created the application. I mean, that was just like,
yes,
I love that story.
How we're interacting with computers now, voice. We couldn't do some of the voice recognition that we're doing now in our apps, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And just the intelligence that these bots bring to our applications, just it gives us a whole new level of interactivity to build into our application. I just think it's really cool.
Well, it's the future we were supposed to have, right? If you look at the way we were supposed to interact with computers in 2001, A Space Odyssey, well, we're in 2016 and we're still not there, you know, talking to a computer, having dialogue and everything. I think we're finally approaching that future that we've been promised. And I guess it's up to us developers to build it.
We'll eventually reach the point where computers kill us. Don't worry. It's
2001 wasn't a big success.
No, not Terminator.
Dave.
You know, the way I see it, the last little while, we've been very screen-centric. You know, even the mobile revolution brought in a different form factor, and it brought our compute with us, but it still tied eyeballs to a screen, and that's what we're moving away from that I think is a paradigm shift. We're moving away from things that are tied to screens. In fact, Nick, maybe you can answer this question that I have. Where do my bots live? When I build a bot, does it get synchronized between the cloud and a device, or is it unavailable to me if I don't have a connection to the cloud?
Oh, that's a good question. Actually, you will need a connection to the cloud because the bot connector service works on Microsoft servers, but your own bot lives wherever you want it to live. It just needs to have an internet connection to it. So typically, you're going to create your own bot, and it's going to run in the cloud either as a C# web service or as a Node.js web service. So you write it yourself, you host it yourself, but then you're connecting it with the bot connector.
Okay.
And the
For
cool
now.
Thing is on top
I mean,
of that...
Eventually, it'll all be on-premise, too. So the government can use bots, you know.
Well, probably. Maybe it'll be
added
to
the Azure
stack.
That's object-oriented programming, right? That's what we used it for back in the day, for sure.
Yeah, so you do run it on your own infrastructure, so that this way people can connect it to their own backends if they want, and secure it in the same way that they would program any other kind of web service that's available. And that means that the same bot can then be called from all these different channels. It can be called from your own app. And there's a lot of facilities developers get as well. Like, there's an emulator that you can load and immediately just point it at your bot, provide the proper app ID and secret, and immediately you can test your bot without having to create the client interface.
Yeah.
Then,
okay, well, let me jump in here, Nick. That's super cool, and I think that there was a lot of excitement at Build around bots, and there's a lot to discuss on that. But we've got a lot of stuff to cover, so Brian, why don't you tell us what you saw at Build?
So some of the things that kind of stood out to me, I mean, I'm going to go back to what Jerry was talking about. I didn't jump in at the time, but you know, some of these things around Edge, you know, I actually have USAA. And so when USAA got up on stage and, you know, we're talking about, you know, bringing Windows Hello authentication to Edge, I was like,
oh, yeah,
that's kind of cool that I can authenticate myself to my bank through my browser with the technologies that we have in Windows Hello. I thought that was pretty cool. One of the other big ones for me, you know, I'm a big OneNote fan. I almost live in OneNote when I'm not when I don't have my IDE up, it's OneNote. And so when we started talking about all the, you know, office improvements and, you know, that ruler that you could, you know, go up and start drawing on.
Wow,
ruler,
yeah.
I was all over that. I want my ruler. I want it now.
Is that the ruler to rule them all?
One rule. There's only one ruler.
One ruler. Okay.
Just one.
How often do you use
Inkey right
now?
And it's not metrics, Nick.
What?
Sorry?
No, it's got to be. You can select metrics.
Nope,
you got to be.
Only
no, you
got
to do metrics.
I'm sure the default is
metrics.
It's
only in decimals of miles. You only have miles. It's only
in
decimals.
In incremental tiny miles, like a thousandth of a mile.
Yeah, that's all you've got.
So good.
It's two binaries. There's one called U.S. and one called rest of world.
Yes, I agree, Nick. I'm with you on that.
Jennifer,
Ryan, do you use a lot of inking right now, or do you think the ruler is going to help you use more inking? Are you a big user? Do you use the pen right now?
I do use the pen, and I actually left my pen at home for this last trip, and I've been kicking myself because I don't have my pen. But, you know, I'm always using my pen, writing notes, and then using, you know, the ink to text feature when I'm done with it.
Brian,
so yeah, you know, I think that, you know, being able to use that ruler and the pen for drawing things that are more precise, you know, or using it in design inside of like PowerPoints and stuff, I think that'll be a nice enhancement. You know,
Brian,
one of the other things that
I
really got interested in was you know, a lot of the IoT stuff that we're doing in Azure. You know, man, just the volumes of data, again, you know, going back to that whole, you know, living toward the future, right? We've got all of these sensors, we've got all these things in our cars, in our homes, and just the volume of information and the ability to parse that and do, you know, create insight for what's going on. But then I guess the last thing is, you know, the GA of Service Fabric. You know, when we look at bringing the engine that's been running Cortana, DocumentDB, all those things, and we're making that, you know, available for developers to build their own microservices frameworks and give it the scalability, the functionality, the robustness. I mean, if it didn't knock your socks off that there was a game of that caliber running in a browser, and then the fact that we're making code edits in production, well, you know, to that game, and it's self-healing, right? It detects that there was a problem. It takes that particular block of code out, you know, puts some other, you know, puts the old code back in, and everything just kept running and nothing ever stopped. You know, to me, that's kind of cool as I think back of all the applications that I've developed. And, you know, when somebody deploys a bad chunk of code, it was 30 minutes, you know, 45 minutes to reverse the bad thing that happened. And
if
just to see that, you know,
if
Service Fabric and all that kind of stuff went into play. And then I guess to kind of top that off, you know, the whole, you know, I mentioned DocumentDB, so it triggered a thought in my mind, was that whole MongoDB layer on top of DocumentDB, or the MongoDB interface to DocumentDB.
That's exciting.
You know, brings that whole, you know, now I can use the all the coolness of DocumentDB without rewriting my Mongo applications.
Yeah, yeah. It's just going to where people are, the way they write code, and enabling and empowering them. I think that's really an awesome scenario. Jennifer.
Yes. I loved Build because there was so much stuff around machine learning this year. A lot of cool stuff. So Nick already mentioned the Microsoft Bot Framework. So much coolness there around natural language and being able to interact with bots in a natural way. But then another thing that just kind of stole the show if you walked around the booth floor was the Microsoft Cognitive Services. Now, the Microsoft Cognitive Services contain, I think, 21 different APIs that can do a whole variety of things to enrich the artificial intelligence in your app. So there's APIs for facial detection, facial recognition, there's speech APIs, speaker recognition, so you can differentiate between voices. There is emotion APIs to pick up on what emotions people are displaying on their face that cover 7 different emotions plus a neutral state. There is a whole bunch of integration with Bing and search APIs. There is natural language understanding, all kinds of things like this that can help you bring more intelligence into your applications. And you may have seen prior to Build, there have been a couple examples that were built on top of the Microsoft Cognitive Framework or the Microsoft Cognitive Services, which were formerly calling Project Oxford. And you may have seen howl.net, which is a fun thing. And there was a similar booth experience where you could go up and it would draw a bounding box around your face to do the facial recognition and show that this is where my face ends. And then it would do a quick look and say it would identify your gender and your age and then also emotion as well. So I think Jeremy and I were both there making funny faces, trying to get it to, oh, let's see, surprise, disgust, you know, doing all those things and just endless thing. But it's exciting, and it really does have some cool applications, which I'll talk about in a second. So there's all of those things that are already there. And then they introduced kind of a new experience. You may have already seen the howl.net, and there's some other ones out there, twinsornot.net, where you can upload 2 pictures, and it'll tell you if they're twins or not. And also, you know, whatdog.net, which will identify different breeds of dogs. And there's all kinds
of whole
cool
suite
stuff
of useful
done.
Applications.
It is. It's so cool. It's so cool.
It is cool.
But the new one that they unveiled at Build this year was something called Project Murphy. And they unveiled that just as a Skype bot. So they built it with using the bot framework. So that way you can interact with it as a Skype bot. So you can use Skype and add Murphy, Project Murphy, as one of your contacts and then interact with him. And it is just the funnest thing. I think I spent, I don't know, wasted way too much time yesterday playing. And the way Project Murphy works is that you ask what if type questions. So something like, what if Scott Hanselman was being chased by an elephant? And then what happens is it goes out and searches the internet and finds pictures of people being chased by elephants and pictures of Scott Hanselman, and they can superimpose them together using just amazing, you know, graphics techniques to create, you know, a picture of a person running away with Scott's face, superimposed over the face. Amazing stuff. So yeah. I spent yesterday, I think I actually tweeted this yesterday, if you check my stream, what if I was a Disney princess? And it took my face and superimposed it over Cinderella. And just really, really just funny stuff.
I did the same thing.
It's so much fun. And then I, what if I was Princess Leia? Also made the thing. There was a couple. It's really, really neat stuff. So, and then you might ask, how did it figure out I? Because, like, how would, you know, Scott Hanselman being chased by an elephant? You can find Scott Hanselman and being chased by an elephant on the internet. But when you ask, you know, what if I? It actually comes back to you and says, oh, can you give me an example of you? And it'll actually ask for, you know, give me one picture of yourself. And so then you just do that as a regular, you know, attachment in Skype where you're like, insert picture, send it a picture. It just holds on to it for 10 minutes. It does not keep it any longer than that. There's a kind of a time box, and it will use your data in the cloud. And then when you say, what if I this, it'll use your picture for that next 10 minutes to use it with other stuff. So much fun. Project Murphy bot, add that to one of your Skype bots. And then I think the thing that Brian mentioned earlier that just absolutely stole the show, they closed the keynote one day, and that was the Seeing Eye app. Now, this was made by a gentleman who works for Microsoft who lost his sight at the age of 7. And he got a pair of glasses, so he's using this interesting hardware. And what it does is when he swipes the edge of the glasses, it would take a picture. And so that enabled these amazing scenarios for him. So first of all, he can just see, use the power of computer vision to see what's going on in his world. And this is through the Microsoft cognitive services. So taking a picture, for example, like if he's walking down the street and he hears an unusual sound, he can swipe to see what that is. And in that particular example that they showed, it was a boy riding on a skateboard, like doing a skateboard trick in the air. And using that object recognition, it can identify, it seems like this is a boy on a skateboard in the air kind of thing. And so using that power of object recognition, it can essentially, you know, describe the world around him to a blind man. And then the second example they showed is an example of being in a meeting and there's a whole bunch of people you're working with and you can't see their faces. So maybe I'm talking for a while and I can't tell, have the people I'm talking to, are they gone to sleep? Are they interested? Are they smiling? Are they surprised? And so using that emotion API, it again, he just swipes the glasses, it takes a picture and then sends that up to the cloud using Microsoft Cognitive Services. It can actually tell him, there's a 20-year-old woman who looks happy. There's a, you know, this age person looks surprised, that sort of thing. And then finally, he also was able to use the power of computer vision to read a menu. There was a really cool, so the way this one worked is he had his phone and he put his phone out over a menu in a restaurant. And the phone actually helped him line up the picture, because that's kind of the hard part, is how do you know how to line up the picture and make sure you mm-hmm. get the whole menu in frame? And it could actually give him, it's using edge detection to actually figure out where the bounds of the menu are. And then it can, it told him to like move the phone up a little bit more or move it, you know, further from the menu, that sort of thing. And then he was able to take a picture and then using OCR, optical character recognition, it can actually read the menu to him. So amazing, amazing uses yeah. of machine learning technology. And that's really the thing that gets me excited is how we're using it to help people, you know, make a real difference in their lives.
And my favorite, if I may add also, I had the pleasure of meeting this this blind software engineer who works for us. His name is Saqib Shaikh, and great person. Went out for a nice dinner at Build, having some sushi with some friends, and he joined us, shared some conversations around like computer speech and things like that and how things translate in his daily life. So aside from, of course, an amazing video and demonstration that he did at Build, awesome individual and great, definitely great to have him as a colleague at Microsoft.
Absolutely. Yeah. I spent some time with him too, and he was amazing.
It's always nice when this technology does not just exist in the abstract, but actually changes yeah. lives tangibly.
Yeah.
Pretty yeah. great. Sam, you had some stuff to talk about, some announcements. What were those?
Hey, I'm really excited about Skype. For developers, I think Skype may offer the fastest way to cache. No, seriously, let's think about it.
You have to explain this to Nick. You mean C-A-S-H, not C-A-C-H-E.
Yes, okay, cache, C-A-S-H. And so if we think about it, so Skype is offering a lot of opportunity to make money. There's hackathons next in May on how to build on building bots globally. So take a look at that at Skype.com. But the three apps that really popped out at Build was a Salesforce collaboration and partnership between Salesforce and Microsoft, where you can use Skype to really improve your ability to reach out and do sales if that's what you're into, or if those are the kind of people that you're developing for, mm-hmm. are Salesforces. And in general, they pay their bills, so that's a good thing. The other one that I'm really excited about is health and telehealth especially. I've been following this since mm-hmm. 1985, and as you can tell, I'm a little on the old side. And the exciting thing about telehealth is that medical categories like dermatology, much of the work can be done via images. So with the telehealth, now we begin to follow along with some of the telehealth things that were laid out by Michael Crichton in 1985. Now, you may know Michael Crichton from Andromeda Strain, which is a great movie from, I think, the 70s, all the way to Jurassic Park. And he was a doctor originally, and one of the things he did at Massachusetts General was to develop a concept of telehealth using old video cameras and some of the very ancient computational systems. We're now going full spectrum on this with telehealth using Skype. So these are, and with this, this means we have HIPAA. So as a developer, you have access to HIPAA-compliant tools that you can use without having to go out and pay your attorneys a bunch of money to get you set up to being HIPAA-compliant. So now you can go to your doctor friends and say, hey, let's make a lot of money, and you can get out of being a doctor, and they'll be all excited. The other one is Smartsheet. And Smartsheet is a way that we can integrate Skype into project management. Now, don't want to say anything about the, you know, but think about it. You might be able to use MS Project to do similar things to Smartsheet. So if you have a large customer that's using MS Project, you can now use the Skype tools that are being discussed at Build to incorporate them into Project, much the same way that Smartsheet is proposing with their own products. Because let's face it, if I'm building 777s at Boeing using MS Project, I'm not going to switch over to Smartsheet overnight. But I might take your integrated product off of the Skype marketplace and pay you for it. And now we have the bots. You can create bots to help check the project. Where is that part for that 77 tail number 488? Where is that located? And the bot will go around and ask people. Or you as a project manager can contact people. Hey, how's the throttle quadrant going for the cockpit? Or where are the chairs for the fancy whatever in the custom
first class
767? But anyway, the Smartsheet is a great example of how you can get into project management. Health and using MD, the MD Health project shows you as a developer that you can use HIPAA, and the Salesforce collaboration shows how you can incorporate this into your Salesforce, be it realtors or retail. So I'm really excited about this. I see, you know, because I could use some money. I don't know about you guys.
I'm just excited for the telehealth. I don't know about you, but my kids are always sick, like nonstop. I need telehealth like now.
Right.
I keep getting more days off.
You don't want to go out of the house, you know?
Oh, and, yeah, oh, seriously.
I make sure everybody
quarantine.
Knew. I'm a bot. Sam's out surfing right now.
Yeah, exactly. Someday it'll be
very
that
convincing.
Way.
You're a very convincing bot, Sam.
I'm going to write a bot that writes a bot.
Jeremy, yes, what about you?
Well, you know, the thing that I'm really excited about, the one thing that really stood out to me, I know it sounds a little bit silly, but as a real real developer, the thing I really love is code and my development environment and all of that geeky stuff. And when I found out that Bash was going to be on Windows, and then when I dug into that and found out that what that really means is that, like, the subsystem for Ubuntu is on Windows, and it allows me to take all of the things that people have written and maybe neglected Windows as a target platform and just run them and they'll just work. It allows me to write in kind of whatever CLI language I want, whether it's PowerShell or Command or Bash or Node or whatever. I can just, you know, I have access to all of those. So the one thing that they were saying at Build is, if you're a developer, Windows can be your home now, you know, because it's not really missing anything. And that's, I totally agree. And I love that.
Hey, Jeremy, can we have Jerry say that word, the Ubuntu, the, how do you say that, Jeremy?
How does that go, Jerry?
Yeah, how does that go, Jerry?
I'm not 100% sure. Nick was correcting me earlier.
No, it was the other way around.
Ubuntu, something like that.
Ubuntu. I think it's the same sound twice. I think it's the same
Ubuntu.
Sound.
Well, there it is. You know, actually, I wish that we had time to react more deeply to all of these announcements, and I actually wish that we had time to bring up all of the other announcements. It was a really rich year. There was a lot of good stuff. It was really fun to see the excitement there at Build on the ground. And then also afterwards, just on Twitter and the Twitterverse, and, you know, there's been tons of excitement. So this is really
Jerry,
cool. I'm looking forward to, like, distilling all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think audiences are going to lynch us if we forget to mention Xamarin's free now.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes. Not only free,
oh,
but
I forgot about that.
That was
yeah,
huge.
It's all integrated.
That was huge.
Are we supposed to
it's
say
all
no
integrated
cost
in Visual Studio. So I just had to sneak this one in because, come on, it's Xamarin. That was probably the most anticipated news
that's
of
awesome.
Build.
Yeah, that is.
But Xamarin is only free if you download Visual Studio first.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing. So if you're a Visual Studio developer today, you get Xamarin.
That's pretty awesome.
Any edition, you can code for free with Xamarin. If you're an enterprise developer with Pro or Enterprise, you also get the full-blown Xamarin. This is no more extras.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, guys, let's go ahead and wrap this up if there's nothing else to add. That was a great golden nugget there at the end, Nick. So if anybody else has another golden nugget that we missed, go for it. Oh, okay. So Sam's got a golden nugget. Is that an event, Sam? Do you want to tout it?
Yeah. So this is the NASA Space Apps, so go to spaceappschallenge.org. There's a great video by Brett Statham. I'm a Martian. And take a look at that. It's hilarious. And make sure you go to Skype.com and get started on this platform. It's a great way to scale out your application.
Awesome. I wish I could have the passion that Sam has. You know what I mean? Wow.
47 years of it.
Enthusiasm. Yeah, that'll do it for you.
The Visual Studio new installer, it was really hot, too.
Oh, yes. That was.
Did you guys see that? So the Visual Studio now, you can just install basically a base package for, like, megabytes.
It's like 380 megabytes.
Yes. Yeah. It's amazing.
In minutes.
It's amazing.
Smaller than Eclipse?
In minutes.
Yeah, it's tiny. Hours. And then you can add on extra things that you're actually going to use. So they've kind of distributed it and broken up. And so you can just get a bare bones install and then add on specifically the things that you use. So only put on the Python tools if you're using them and that sort of thing. So I'm really excited about that. It runs side by side right now. I have it installed side by side with my Visual Studio 2015 right now.
So I don't have to download 44 gigs.
Yeah, I know. Right?
You know what? Speaking about install, Project Centennial was released at Build as well, where you could wrap
another
up
one.
A Win32 app.
Awesome.
Yeah, I want to do this again with some more stuff.
Yeah, there's too much.
Okay, we need another 2 hours here.
We'll see if we can make that happen. Hey, let me also just give a little plug. Jennifer, talk to the guys that are working with that Minute installer for Visual Studio. That's my name for it, the Minute installer. That's not the official name. But anyway, go look on Channel 9 for Jennifer and find that video where she actually just does it right on the screen. So you can watch that happen.
We install in real time with Tim C.
Okay, guys, we're going to do this all day. I've got to wrap it up at some point. So let's go ahead and do that now. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. If you didn't catch Build 2016, make sure you go to the website and download all the sessions and watch those. Know up and watch. We're going to be – this is the index video. Each of these TEs and more are going to be bringing these announcements to you in much more detail on blog posts and videos. So look down below in the show notes here on this blog post and check out what all of those different videos are as they land over the next 3 weeks. So thanks for joining us here. See ya.